When we launched after like 8 months, we didn't make a single sale because Nigerians apparently don't relate to technology that way. We had a search bar there where you're supposed to type in the subject, maybe physics, maths, or whatever you want to learn. People were typing, is this safe? Can I trust? And we thought, oh my God, we've built something that made sense in our head. I remember there was a time I actually was afraid Tutorial would fail, would like die. And it was so scary.
What was your first experience pitching to investors like?
I've gotten so many no's and of course a couple of yeses. When I get a no, I try to find out why they're not interested. Some investors are, you know, kind enough to tell you. So we are still in the business where we don't really need the money to survive. We need it to grow faster, but we don't need it. It's not like you do or die.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, to balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of My Tech Journey with Esther. Today I have a very special guest with me. I have Godwin Benson. Welcome Godwin to the podcast.
Hi Esther, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. How are you doing? How's your day been so far?
It's been good. I just moved, last week from Lagos to the UK, so I'm adjusting to the cold. But apart from that, great time with family and looking good.
Okay, that's nice. My day has been good. It's been really cold. I've been struggling with a bit of cold, so I had to drink hot water because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm having hot pass today. And today was when my throat was just feeling itchy, but other than that, it's been a good day for me too. All right, so before we get started, I would like to read your biography and, you know, introduce Godwin Benson officially to us, the audience. Godwin is the CEO and co-founder of Tutera, an edtech platform transforming the way people access personalized learning in Africa. A first-class graduate in systems engineering, Godwin began his career at Deloitte before launching Tutera in 2014. His vision was to connect learners with qualified tutors, and since then, Tutera has grown into a leading platform in Nigeria and beyond. Godwin's entrepreneurial journey has earned him recognition, including winning the Royal Academy of Engineering Africa Prize for Engineering Innovation in 2017, and being a finalist at the Africa Business Heroes Competition in 2024. Very recently. He's deeply passionate about creating impactful educational opportunities through tech. So, Godwin, it's a pleasure to have you on my show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Before we get started on the deep stuff, we always like to start the show with a game or a teaser or a trivia. So, I was like, what can I give you? I don't want to give you a country trivia because I do lots of country trivia. So I was like, okay, let me give you a fun teaser. So the fun teaser is, if your life was a movie, what would it be about and who would feature in it?
Interesting. Okay, I think the movie would be about either British intelligence or British history. And that's because I like the intelligence that I see most times in British films. I'm very intrigued by it. And as a person, I often imagine myself using those advanced technologies to get certain things done, right? So, that would be what it would be about, you know, using gadgets or innovation one way or the other, just creating very nifty technologies that do amazing stuff, right? Catch crime or, you know, detect different things, right? Who would be in it? I'm very bad with names of actors, like very, very bad. I literally don't hold anyone in my head. But I think one of my favorite movies is The
Oh,
Kingsman. I'm
Kingsman,
not sure if you've
yeah, I
seen
really
it.
like Kingsman too, yeah.
Yeah. So
Those
any of
kind
the
of people,
actors there would
right?
be good. Exactly.
Yeah, I like Kingsman. It's one of my favorite movies also.
It is mine of all time, all the different episodes.
Yeah, that's
Been
awesome.
amazing.
That's really nice. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? All right. For me, I think if I have to answer the question, I don't. I was thinking I like a good balance of something entertaining and something inspiring. So it'll be a bit of entertainment, fun stuff, and something also inspiring, motivational. So yeah, and I don't know if obviously I'll feature in it. But
Of course.
other than that, maybe it'll be t directed by someone like Tyler Perry, because I like Tyler Perry as well. Yeah.
You like Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
He does great
yeah,
mo
he
movies.
does. So something around that, all of that. All right, Godwin, let's get into the deeper stuff. I know you're here to give us all the Rema and all the deep stuff. So let's get started. I know building a business, can be very demanding, and it's you're giving your all into any business that you're building. For me, I remember when I started after school, I started like a jewelry business, and it was like I was pouring my heart and soul into a business. So I know when you're building a business, it can really shape you. So my question is, how has building Tutoria for the past 10 years shaped you into the kind of person that you are today?
Oh yeah, great question. And you're right. The context you gave is spot on. Building a business is like raising a child. You give it your 100% attention, maybe 150 if possible. Especially at the early stages when you're basically experimenting. You don't know if it's gonna work or not, but you hope it does. And so you put yourself, your time, your life into building it. And it becomes somewhat your identity, especially at the early st stages. You really can't separate yourself from your business. I remember times when before I worked at Tutera, I was at Deloitte, and I was used to the whole 9 to 5. But then I started working on Tutera, and I was like 9 to 9, where 9 is
Nine to
9 p.m.
twelve,
to 9 p.m.
literally.
It literally go around the clock, and I didn't feel tired because I was working on something I felt could make an impact and I was passionate about. So doing that, this 10 years now has really made me a better person. So what that means is I've picked up a lot of skills, like so many skills. I think right now I feel like I have so many skills. I'm not sure which ones to focus on, because building a business that I had to bootstrap for the longest time. I had to do sales, I had to do marketing, I had to do even programming at some point, design, product, customer research. And so you tend to become like a jack of all trade, right? But it also helps you build like a stronger personality, having to deal with different types of customers, employees. The business has grown from just one, just me and my co-founder, to now we have over 35 staff, and we're looking to get to around 50 by the start of next year. So it strengthens the person, because now you can take on difficult problems without being afraid. At the earlier days, I think I was always afraid of, if it was a customer complaint, I feel so bad, and
Take it
I'm
so
so scared that,
personal,
wow,
right?
people are, why don't they see what I'm building? Why don't they see the value? Or so customers who just don't see what you're trying to do, or are not very friendly with their comments. Those things got to me, but over time we learned how to do things better. We learned how to take feedback, and not sort of be affected by that emotionally, but actually try to understand what the customers are saying, and how do we get better at serving our customers. I think I've also matured a great deal these 10 years to the point where whatever I do now, I can almost tell the path to success of almost any venture because we failed so many times at so many things, and we've known the things that work, especially for the African markets. We've had, thousands and thousands of customers, so we know how they think. And so if I'm to release a product or work on a feature, I can almost tell with 100% certainty if Nigerians will buy it or not, or how they react to it or not, having been in that market. So I think overall, it's made me a seasoned entrepreneur. Maybe in some ways, it also made me very careful because there are not many types of businesses that can actually flourish in Africa, because most the bulk of people do not really have that much of extra money to spend on. Things are getting better, but most people are still more at the subsistence level in Africa. So there's a bit of care you need to apply when you're trying to do business in Africa, so that you don't hear stories that touch, right? So I think it made me very careful on what we invest on as a business or as a person. I look at things that I know solves a real pain point. It's not nice to have, like, is a need, and many Africans want that and Nigerians want that. So we've become skillful at spotting those opportunities and taking that advantage of them. I think it's come through a series of struggles, wins, pains, ups and downs. But I think as a person, I'm stronger. I'm very positive. I love Nigeria no matter what, and I'm still very optimistic. We're doing the little we can to create jobs, to create employment, educational excellence, and just a li little bit here and there to build that future of a great country that we all dream of, So I think that I'm better, stronger. Nothing can shake me now like it used to shake me before. And in the process, I've picked up a lot of skills, and I now have a problem of deciding which
To
one to
focus
focus
on
on, because I can do so
almost
many things.
everything. Yeah, I love what you said about, from what you said, all I was hearing, or some of what I was hearing, was just the thick skin. I could really relate. When a customer sends you maybe a complaint and you're already feeling bad, or you just get an email and for your whole day or most of the day you just start feeling bad, especially if the customer
In
was
fact,
very harsh.
sometimes I don't want to open the mail. I see the mail, I'm
I
like,
don't
I'm
want
not
to
gonna
open
touch
But now you're like, oh
it.
nah. It's at least now, like, you've learned to separate the business to a large extent from yourself and not take things so personally, which is so good. So let's talk about the early days of Tuteria. While you were talking, you mentioned that you had to wear many hats, and I can definitely understand you being like the customer support person, the marketing person, the programmer, and all. So, what was that really like in terms of handling everything at that point? Maybe the very first year of Tuteria, about how many did you have any employer or employee rather, or was it just you and your co-founder? How was that like in the early days?
Yeah, thanks. Great question. The early days were it was exciting. Building stuff is exciting, just building, I was working at Deloitte. I had just resigned, saved up a bit of money which I wanted to use to fund this new idea. Brought in my co-founder, who was my classmate at the university. We both moved into my house, my parents' house, and we were living there. He comes on Monday, he leaves on Friday, so we're spending almost every
Weekend.
day
Okay,
together,
Monday
working
leaves on
from
Friday.
morning
Okay,
till
the
night.
entire week.
He leaves on Friday,
Okay.
weekends, and he comes back here. And then, we had a clear idea where we wanted to go based on the examples of other companies we saw then, like Fiverr. There was Airbnb, Dropbox. There weren't any successes locally that we could emulate. The big companies then were Interswitch, GT Bank, you know, Champs. Even Paystack launched that particular year, I think 2014 or so. So there were no successes locally we could sort of model after. So we modeled after the ones we saw. Nobody, right? Little did we know that we're in for a shocker. So we built the entire platform in-house thanks to my co-founder. He's an amazing software developer. I helped a little bit, but he did most of the work. And I think we got to market in about 6 to 8 months of building the platform every day, just internally. And of course, doing some customer surveys, you know. For instance, I remember one survey we did to ask customers what was most important to them. Was it the quality of the tutor, the price, the availability? Most people told us quality of tutors, but when we launched, it seems price was the...
Price was the differentiator. What they mean can be very different.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah. So we built a platform that was ahead of our time. We built a no-touch connect tutor platform where you could come to our site, search for tutors, hire them, make payments, and you don't have to speak to anybody. Just sort of do that entire journey on your own. Again, you know, we're copying Fiverr and the rest of them. So, but when we launched after like 8 months, we didn't make a single sale because, yeah, Nigerians apparently don't relate to technology that way. So what we found was people would come to the site. We did our marketing. We got a lot of tutors to sign on. At the time we launched, I think we had close to 1,000 tutors that had already signed on. So they were waiting for us to bring on the clients. But when the clients started coming, there were issues of safety. We saw that it was a very low trust environment. People were not comfortable hiring tutors online in like a shopping cart where you pick products and pay, you know. They were not going to do that because we found that they would visit the site. And we had a search bar there where you're supposed to type in the subject, maybe physics, maths, or whatever you want to learn. And people were typing, is this safe? Can I trust? And we thought, oh my God, we've built something that made sense in our head. You know. So even we had to then install like a live chat on the site. So when people go to the profile of a tutor, on that profile, you see the tutor's picture, background, and all of that. People were still chatting with us. You also saw a page where you could book lessons. It showed the available days and times, but people would still start, is this tutor free? Where does he live?
And
it was
dead.
Right there on the site. Right?
Oh my God. Nigerians are interesting.
We realized that this wasn't going to work. So, and of course, we're not making any money. So we had to take a step back, and we realized that people were operating in a place where people didn't trust technology. They had a lot of skepticism about online businesses. Even paying upfront was going to be a challenge. So what we did was we took about 3 months to pivot from a no-touch platform to one where you just tell us what your challenges were, right? And we would recommend tutors for you. Since they were asking us via live chat, is this person good? What did he study? Blah, blah. We said, okay, fine. Just tell us what you want. We would give you the best teachers. And so the minute we did that, so we removed all the amazing bells and whistles we had done and just turned it to a simple form. Just fill this form. Tell us what you want. I'll get you to the... Yeah, we'll match your order. When we did that, we made our first sale.
Oh, awesome.
It was incredible.
Like, oh, okay, so this is what they want.
Yeah, this is actually what they want. So the way that worked was, you know, they filled the form. It came to us back end. We did all the matching. And then we sent them the profile of the best suited tutor. And then interestingly, the customer who first paid was from Port Harcourt. She saw the profile of the tutor, she liked her, she clicked and paid online, you know. And in fact, then there was no Paystack, remember, there was Paga.
Yeah,
we were using Paga then. Yeah, and it was a real headache to get on Papaga, but somehow we got in. We had to go to their office, sit with them, you know. But times have changed now, and it's a lot easier. Then I think the payment didn't go through at the time, so we're really, really pained. Our first customer, the payment was
Wow.
come through. So we had to send her our bank details, then she transferred into it. It was 24,000 naira for maybe six lessons or so, yeah. I can't forget her name, Mrs. Amakuroshi. That was our first
To
customer.
her, thank you
And
for to carry us
yeah,
first
she believed in
customer.
us, right? Yeah, so it was after that. I remember we had like a dance in the room, like our very first customer. It was around like 9 p.m. that the payment came in. And since then, of course, we continued to grow. It was just me and my co-founder up until we got maybe to the 50th or so customer. It was just both of us. Then we now brought on our first staff, who was with us for almost 7 to 8 years before she left. So yeah, those early days were interesting, you know. At some point before we launched, we were robbed. You know, people came into our home and stole our laptops,
Oh.
you know, stole everything and left. And you know, interestingly, we had set a launch date already online that's going live. So
Oh my God.
the all our laptops were stolen. We had to just go out the next day and buy new ones because the launch date had already been set. But yeah, for us, that was an indication that we were onto something. The fact that one person could pay was an indication that there are probably hundreds of thousands of people like her who would need a
Service
service
like
like that.
that.
So that's how we got started.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a very interesting story. You know, one, just hearing how the Nigerian market is, like the Nigerian or African market is so different from like what you have abroad, right? Even me, when I was building my own jewelry business back in the day, I realized that, oh, I wanted to actually make a website, but then I was like, do Nigerians really purchase things on the website? No, even for me, I'd rather want to chat up someone. I'll see someone's website from
Exactly.
Instagram. I'm not going to, I think it's just a Nigerian thing. I'm not going to buy anything on your website. I want to DM you first, chat with someone on WhatsApp or on Instagram, and
Exactly.
then I send directly to your account. I'm not going to use my card, but it's a different thing because I'm in the UK now and I can just go on Amazon, buy seamlessly. But when you're in Nigeria, I think there's just this mindset that, no, I must talk to someone. And it's interesting.
I was very
I
sure.
was very sure that this is not a scam. And for you and your co-founder, you were able to just push through and see that, okay, understand the market and see that, okay, this thing we've built, we need to restructure it for our particular market, for the Nigerian market. And like, so you mentioned that it took you a while to get your first client. How many months did it take to get that first client?
In total, around 11
11
months, 8
months.
months to first launch, then 3 months to redesign.
And how long did it now take you from like the first client to the 50th client before you then got someone, to join you? Do you remember?
I think roughly 2 to 3
Okay, so
months.
that means things
Yeah,
picked
because
up.
once we had, yeah, things picked up
Awesome.
exactly.
Awesome.
Because I mean, there was huge need for tutoring. There were not many providers at the time, and so a lot of parents just had nowhere to go. So in fact, then when we did any advert, we were often overwhelmed. We had to shut the advert down. There was too many people coming in looking for tutors. So yeah, that way we grew really fast in terms of number of customers and revenue.
Awesome. How many resumes have you sent out with zero response? Or maybe you're getting interviews, but you just can't seem to land a job. I've been there and I know it's so frustrating, right? But the good news, I've created a toolkit to change all of that for you. Introducing the Get a Job Toolkit, your step-by-step guide to finally land your dream tech job. Inside, you get 3 resume and cover letter templates, a job tracking sheet, 100 plus interview paraphrases, reach out messages to recruiters, and a LinkedIn optimization checklist. I created this toolkit because I know how hard
applying to jobs can be. So whether you're just starting out your career or making a career switch to tech, this will save you so much time and stress. Click the link below to grab your toolkit and let's get you hired.
I know that I've read online about your story a bit, even though you're going to share it shortly, about the idea for Tuteria. I know that you were teaching someone and then they failed to pay you, something like that. So yeah, yep. Tell us more about what even inspired Tuteria in the first place.
Okay. Oh yeah, thanks. Just like you said, you know, I love teaching. I don't do so much of it now, but I used to do a lot of it back then. I remember when I was in GS3, I would stay back after school hours, you know, to teach an empty class. All my classmates have gone home. I'd just pick the chalk and go to the board and be explaining maths to myself. I just loved it. And then, of course, SS1, I had my first tutoring gig. So I was a science student, the top in my class at the time. So my further maths teacher reached out to me to say, hey, he has a friend that's been looking for a tutor for his son. And, you know, I offered to teach, of course, and the amount to be paid was 6,000 naira back then. You know, but it was a lot of money in my head. Yeah, because I planned it. I'll buy this textbook. I bought like two textbooks without money. And then maybe one shirt, because I was popular. I was popularly wearing one shirt every day, so I needed to buy an extra pair, you know. So I spent the money in my head. But then for the class, I really prepared. I wrote my notes. I wrote my exercises. And by the first 2 weeks into the tutoring, the dad was so impressed, he included the sister who was in a lower class. I said, sure, we agreed 9,000. I was so happy, like, oh man, I'm rich. I'm the richest kid in the block.
I'm making money already.
This was far back, what, 2005, 2006, it was a long time ago. Right. So, well, yeah, we finished the month and I wasn't paid, which was it was really painful to me, because I'd planned how I would spend that 9,000. So I kept going to the man's house. I went so many times. He was giving me all sorts of stories. You know, the stories never ended. So at some point, I realized that I wasn't going to get the money. So I sort of gave up, but then it made an impression on me that how do I avoid this from happening to me or to, you know, other people like me who are passionate about sharing knowledge and could be taken advantage of by, you know, customers like him. I don't think he was a bad person. He just had financial challenges, and I fell low in his priorities.
Like, no, this person is a student. He will not mind if I don't pay.
Yeah, what would I do? What could I do, right? That was, like, I would say, like, the seed of the idea. And then, of course, after that time, I had other gigs, tutoring gigs that actually paid me. And I made quite a lot of money on campus. Then I paid almost all my, from year two to year five, I paid it by myself. Most of them was through tutoring gigs that I got here and there. Even after school. So I did a lot of tutoring and I was making, like, a lot of money. So I realized, yeah, this is actually something I could do to help many more people. But then after service year was when that experience sort of came back to me, you know, that I had been, you know, the experience with the person who didn't pay me. And so one of the things I realized was, I remembered he was looking for a tutor for more than 3 months. Oh, wow. That's this man in question, and he had gone around asking people till he found my father, my teacher. But interestingly, my house was just about 10-15 minutes away from him, which was, I think, the eureka moment for me, that there are actually brilliant people everywhere who have a bit of spare time, but we don't know how to connect with them. So they are brainy guys, and I met a lot of them on campus. I met them everywhere. These guys are so brilliant, but the knowledge is just in their head, right? There are other people who need them, but there's no way to access them. And so Tutera was meant to be that bridge that connects the custodian of knowledge to those who need them. So that's how we started the business.
Okay. And when you look back at like the vision, which is like Tutera being the bridge to connect people that need like tutors to the tutors themselves, does that vision still drive you 10 years after, or has it evolved maybe into something bigger or different, or, you know, pivoted a little from that initial vision that you had?
Yeah, it still drives me, because we have seen the potential and the impact it can actually make. You know, like I tell people that Tutera for me feels like a mission. Every other thing I do, I'm just doing it to, you know, just make a few boxes here and there. But with Tutera, I'm actually I have an opportunity to make impactful change. But of course, the vision has morphed into something much bigger. So we see ourselves now more as an education company, not a tutoring company, where tutoring is one of the services we offer. We now also do self-paced courses. In fact, now we've launched a new brand called MedBody, where we train people trying to get into the healthcare space through pre-recorded courses and sort of self-paced learning. We're currently building an AI learning platform where people can use that to prepare for any exam, right? And sort of get ready for. In fact, it's so good that when you take the initial test, it can give you really deep insight about your likelihood to pass the exam. Awesome. So it's more like it tells you an expo that based on where you are now, these are the gaps in your knowledge that will not allow you pass. And then this is the game plan to help you pass, right? So there are so many other learning solutions we're building, because our core mission is to make quality, personalized learning more accessible. And we're doing that through a myriad of channels. Tutoring is now just one of them.
Yeah, I agree that when you have a vision, eventually, I think at the core, it's still the same vision, but I think the way you implement it can now be different. But at the core of it, like, it's still the same vision. So
exactly. I think it's similar to what, you know, Steve Jobs says, that, you know, vision, it pulls you, right? It shows you a bit of what it needs to achieve, but it pulls you in. And the closer you get, the more you see, right? It just opens up and opens up. And you just realize, you know, you're just so sucked in.
Yeah, true. You just start thinking of ways to implement the same vision.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I was reading online, you know, about Tutera recently, and I know that in 2021, you had over 3,000 tutors. I hope that data is correct. And so where are you now in terms of tutors? Like, what's the number now in terms of the number of tutors?
I think we have about 10,000 now.
Wow, that's awesome. That means you scaled like times three in just 3 years. Awesome.
3 years, yes. In fact, that's even, we tightened the process of onboarding and then increased the reach to get more tutors.
Yes.
So, yeah, we have around 10,000. Okay.
That's really impressive. So how do you, ensure the quality even as you're scaling? Because I know that scaling can be, very accelerated. And, you know, if you're not careful to ensure quality, it may just suffer getting all sorts of people. So how do you still ensure that quality while scaling?
Yeah, great question. And I get asked this by everybody. Right?
No worries.
I was saying, I get asked that every time. And when it comes to quality, and, you know, tutoring, you need to put in place a process that ensures that the people who go through that process have met the minimum quality standard required. So for us, we've spent a lot of time figuring out that process. But what it looks like right now is Every tutor starts with an online application where they tell us who they are, their background, education, work history, blah blah blah. And then they progress to take, no, they progress to complete an ID, like a KYC, where they verify their identities and all that, especially if they're going to be teaching physically. Although we do support online, but if you're going to be going into the homes of people, you need to verify your identity, right? Then beyond that, then you take a subject competency test. Now, these are, strong tests, online tests, which you have just one attempt at passing,
Oh,
which means if you fail
that's
it the
the
first
end.
time, that's the end. You can't teach that subject. There's a minimum pass mark. And there are tests for everything. If you want to teach physics, chemistry, and piano, you're going to take three
Different
different
tests.
tests, right? So with the test, you pass that, then you go on to the next thing, which is like the video interview. It's a one-way interview where we give you a question on the spot and we ask you to answer it. It also doubles as a teaching demo where you record yourself answering the question and explaining the topic that was asked. After that, then you provide references to guarantors that are verified by the team before you come on board. Is there one more step? Yeah, I think that's
That's
it mostly.
okay.
You create your profiles and all. Then we also have a rating system where you get your first customer as a tutor. That customer has to book another lesson with you a second time because that's oftentimes a strong indication that they are satisfied with the
That is the
service
offer,
you're
yeah.
rendering. Yeah, and then you also have to maintain a rating of 4 out of 5 to continue to get clients. So
Okay,
it's really,
that's
really high,
high. Okay,
which means
you
the
don't
bar
have
for
you don't you're not cutting people slack.
the
They have to always be on
bar.
point.
You have to always be on point. Once you go below 4, the recommending system will not pick you anymore.
Same.
And you can continue with existing customers, but you won't
New
get new ones
customers
till your
goes
rating
up.
goes back above 4. Yeah. So that way we ensure we always have really good guys coming in and being maintained. And of course, if there's ever any complaint about a tutor, then of course we look into it. If it's grounds for dismissal, then
Just
we do
dismissed.
that as well.
Okay, yeah, I love
Yeah.
how you've put in place measures to just ensure that that quality remains. Because I think at the end of the day, the quality of a tutor is what will help you also make money as a business.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah,
Absolutely.
for me growing up, my mom was also one of those parents that, would say you need to have a lesson teacher. And I think if for any reason we are not doing well in a particular subject, or she sees that the tutor is not serious, maybe he comes late, that would just be the end of, if he comes late today, comes late next week, that would just be the end. And she's just going to request for a new tutor.
Yeah.
So putting those measures in place, I think it just helps people sit up and know that, okay, even though I'm going to, a family to teach, their house, and there's not necessarily a CEO or someone, a boss that I will
Yeah.
report to, at the end of the day, it depends on the output, the quality of what they do. That will depend on if they will get more clients from Tutera. So, yeah, I
Exactly.
love how you've put those
And
measures.
we
Yeah.
even take that, yeah, we take that a step further
Okay.
by, of course, we invest in the teachers
Oh,
through trainings,
interesting.
classes, we hold a lot of professional development courses to help them
Their
build their
skills,
capacity.
okay.
We also have a system that tracks that they're actually delivering the classes.
Oh.
So we're not just a matchmaking platform where you just get a tutor and leave. No, after every lesson, tutors have to come in to say, this was the topic that I taught, these were the challenges that I saw, this is where the child is improving. So there's like daily reporting to
Reports,
show
yeah.
how the lessons are progressing, yeah, which makes the tutors more
Yeah, it
responsible.
does.
And we also let them know that of course there are various things that are expected of you. You need to be a professional. So things like punctuality, how you dress, how you prepare for your class. So like the next stage for us, we're also curating resources that will guide tutors, because sometimes a tutor may not have the right resources for a particular class and age or subject. So we want to make sure that by the time they have to teach, those resources are already available, just to make sure that the quality of the lessons are, you know, top par.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's talk about funding. I know that when you were talking about the early stages, you talked that, you know, you mentioned that you bootstrapped Tutoria to a large extent. So how much did you start with? Like, do you remember how much you put into the business for the first time? Maybe it's to buy whatever. Do you remember how much you started with?
How much did we start with? I think in total, I had saved up a little over 500K. And we used all of it till we got to the last maybe 25K. Yeah, because we had to buy a gen. We didn't have light. We had to buy a gen. There's buying fuel regularly.
Yeah.
You had to buy data. We had laptops, except when it was stolen. We had to replace it. But yeah, we I think maybe somewhere around 500k in total was what we set aside. We used for that 8 months while we're building, and just it was mostly buying fuel and data. Nothing too serious. Then I think we also got a couple of grants. You know, the very first grant we got was 3.5. I think it was 500K. I think it was 500K. Yes. 500K. It meant so much because
Naira,
we went down
US
to
dollars.
The last 15K.
Naira.
Okay. Naira.
Naira.
It was big money.
It's big money because at that time, that's like almost 10 years ago, 10 years ago. So that must have been a lot of money.
That was a lot of money. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that was our first grant, and we got 3.5 million from, I think, from MTN. We got a couple of grants that helped us. So we bootstrapped until we eventually raised a seed round.
Pre-seed round. Okay. Yeah. What was your first experience pitching to investors like? I know it can be a bit nervous, but no, you're Godwin Benson. So, but like, what was that experience pitching for the first time like pitching to Terrier?
It was exciting. My first pitching experience was the 500K grant. Let's say pitching a business. But before that, I was used to speaking to crowds, you know, so I wasn't that nervous. But this was the first sort of business speech. Of course, I went on YouTube. I watched a lot of pitches, and I basically wrote down everything I was going to say on paper, memorized it, even memorized my intonations, my acting, everything, how I move my body, everything was rehearsed, right? So I basically went on stage that day and I just downloaded everything that I had rehearsed. It turned out to be a really good pitch because I was the second, although most people felt I should have won. A lot of people came back to me and said that was a great pitch. I was encouraged. So I think that made me feel very comfortable when it comes to pitching in general. So having to pitch investors, well, I think I would say when we raised the pre-seed, it was not a big round. It was just a $250K round just to help build more technology and sort of access the market more. It was an investor who I had met through, who sort of knew me from some competitions I attended, the Africa Prize for genuine innovation that I won. Yeah, he was there, so he saw me pitch on the live stage anyway. And then I think he reached out later on to say he liked what we were doing and he wanted to see how he could support us. I think we were very averse to funding then because some of the deals that I heard about at the time were sort of cutthroat deals, and I just felt I didn't want to go down that path. I wasn't ready to give out 25 or 50% of the business for 25K, you know. So those were the deals that were being
really cut
there. No, I did have a friend who said to me that He gave out 25% of the business for 50K. You know, and I said, wow, damn, man, that's not nice. You know, so we just said, let's just focus on revenue and focus on grant. So, but yeah, of course, I was able to pitch to him. So I would say that the first round we raised, which is our only round, it was a bit easy because the investor came to me. You know, so I didn't have to go pitching to several people and get all the no that most founders would get. So it was, and I just told him that, you know what, I don't need this money, but I because if you're going to fund the entire thing, I'm just going to speak to you. I don't have time to speak to several people. And he was happy to fund the whole thing. I said, yeah, let's just do it. You fund it and let's move on. But we are currently about to close another round. Awesome. And I've done my first year of pitching around. And I've gotten so many no's. Yeah, I've gotten so many no's. And of course, a couple of yeses. Oftentimes they say you have to speak to maybe pitch to 50 investors to get your yes. I think I spoke to maybe around 20, 30 roughly. And I've gotten three people who are participating in the round now. So it's difficult. It's a long process. It's quite distracting from the main business. But if you're building a business that requires venture capital, you sort of have to factor that in into how you spend your time as a founder. It's a core
part.
KPI of being a CEO. Yeah. You have to know how to go and look for capital.
And at this point, I know you mentioned that you've gotten a couple of no's. So at this point, as a founder, how do you deal with no's? Right, knowing that you know, it's funny because you have results of what you've already done, and when people still tell you no, how exactly do you deal with no's at this point in the business? Because, you know, at the beginning it's easy, at least I feel like it's easy to deal with no's because you feel like, okay, I'm just starting, so it's understandable. But knowing that you've been in this game for quite a while and people still tell you no, how do you process that?
Yeah, that's a deep question, and I'll answer it in two ways. Being in business for a while can be good and bad, right? It can be good if you grew very fast, right? You know, but then oftentimes the circumstances that your business was exposed to when you started is not the same as now. So oftentimes, if you're a business that has been around for quite some time, you're compared with people that just launched 2 years ago or 3 years ago, who have, maybe they've raised money, they have a lot of things. But I mean, when we started, there was no pay stack. If you cast your mind back, what that meant was we were paying maybe 17, 15, 20 tutors every day. We had to go with the actual cash
annually to the bank to pay with in their accounts
daily. We go to pay, yes. So we had a list of all the tutors and their names and their banks, and we go to UBA with that schedule and ask them to pay. We did that every day. So some days 500K, some days 200K, some days 300K. You know, that was a different context. And because that's what I meant by saying, sometimes when you start, the conditions then is not the same as someone who started like last year, who has tried Paystack,
you know, can
go global from day one, right? AI, everything. But back then, you couldn't even dream of those things. So when I get a no, I try to find out why they're not interested. Some investors are, you know, kind enough to tell you. Many times it's because it doesn't align with their investment thesis, which means that I didn't do my job well in aligning with the kind of investors I should be speaking to. Sometimes it's also that they're not interested in that particular industry, right? Maybe, you know, there are not many edtech investors. So, you know, and edtech is peculiar in that people do invest in edtech a lot. There are not a lot of edtech investors, so there are just a handful of people who are sympathetic towards edtech, and you know, so you have to go to those people. They are the ones who would invest in edtech. Otherwise, they'll wait until you're really big before it becomes interesting to them. So edtech has that sort of nuance. So most of the no's I got, some were saying we were not at the stage they wanted to invest in. They wanted, you know, us to be much bigger in terms of, you know, scale, growth, revenue. Some felt we were not growing fast enough. You know, and of course, they're comparing us with like the fintechs and all, but you really can't do that, right? That's what happens. Yeah. That's what happens with an investor who doesn't invest in edtech, because they don't understand that edtech most times is a long game. You put in a lot of effort before you really start seeing the dividend in terms of revenue. Because interestingly, most people feel learning should be free. You know, it should just be free. It's like a basic human right. So if you're charging for education, sometimes it takes a bit of a longer conversion cycle. So I think I take the learnings. I try to improve my pitch. I improve my messaging, because oftentimes we want to say is not really what the VCs are hoping to hear. For instance, when I started pitching the first time around, I was telling them everything we did. But I realized they were not interested in everything. They're interested in just one thing. So I realized the more I removed the fluff and just talked about this one thing, I got more responses. Mm. Yeah, so I realized we had to start saying it from their perspective. You know, for instance, they want to know what's the size of the opportunity, you know, why are you the team to build it? You know, what's your traction? Is it scalable infinitely? You know, just talking about those things that I'm interested in increases your chances of getting a yes, right? And I think that for me now, getting a no doesn't really mean much. I just move on. You know, I think I have that luxury because we are still in the business where we don't really need the money to survive. We need it to grow faster, but we don't need it. It's not like you do or die. Yeah, we have everything going. So I can turn back an investor that I don't like. Or even if they're offering us something, if I don't really feel like there's alignment in our vision, I could just say no. Yeah, because the company can keep going on its own. Not everyone has that luxury, but when you do, I think it's a really good thing.
Okay. You participated in African Business Heroes competition like a couple of months back. How was that like?
Yeah. That was good. We didn't win, which was sad, but I will apply again. Yeah, we were in the top 20 of Africa Business Heroes, pitched in Egypt. But I think it just didn't favor me, because one of the judges on the panel, interestingly, had invested in two tutoring companies that failed.
So they already came with that bias.
Yeah. And he didn't hide it. It was obvious. In fact, after the meeting, some people said that what wasn't fair, because he came at me as though I was the one who failed.
Took you personal.
You know, it was really personal. Oh, wow. He just kept going and going, and he was angry. I just said, "Whoa,
I'm not
this is a lot, man." Interestingly, the three edtech companies that got to that top 20 all were not selected. Oh, wow. So it just feels like he just didn't like edtech, and because some guys on the group were really good edtech companies, but none of us made it through. So we just felt, this guy, we're just not lucky in this episode. But apart from the winning the prize, it was a great experience meeting the other entrepreneurs in Egypt. We fought like really good partnerships, really brilliant guys solving interesting problems across the continent. And for the 10 people who, you know, got onto the finals, because we were excited for them, there was one Nigerian there who is my friend. So I'm like, yay, go and get the prize for us, right? So, apart from the pitching, it was a great experience.
Okay, that's good to hear. I know that, you know, when people have all these experiences, especially investors, it can maybe make them biased and somehow, even if you do well, because a lot of times competitions like that, it's really out of your control. It depends solely on the judges or the people.
Exactly.
So even if you do so well, it's not dependent on how you do. It's more or less dependent on the people that on the judges. So two more questions before we wrap up on this episode. What's been the most personal or emotional challenge you faced building Zooteria so far? Has there been any time that you just thought about it, or you felt like, is there a possibility of just walking away from this entire business? So what's been the most personal or emotional challenge that you faced building Zooteria?
I think there have been so many. It was challenging picking one. But I would try to pick one. I remember there was a time I actually was afraid Zooteria would fail, would like die. And it was so scary because we were losing money, really fast. And I think we were down to maybe the last couple of millions left in the bank. And I didn't see a way out. I reached out to a couple of friends I had to try to get like loan and all that, but it wasn't really forthcoming. People were dealing with their own stuff. I felt like I was alone in the world. I remember being in, at home with my wife, and I was actually crying that we could actually die soon. And why I felt that way wasn't that I felt hopeless in myself as a person, but I was thinking about all the teachers that depend on us and all the customers and parents and my staff, my team members who, had forgone other opportunities to focus on building this vision with me. And I just said, how do I face them to tell them, we run out of money and everything had come to naught. So it was really sad time for me, but, I had to show up sounding like everything was fine, but I wasn't fine. But I think how we got out of that was we just took a loan from, a bank. They were happy to give us, wasn't some money, like 10 million. We used that to try to delay the shutdown a little bit, and we were able to go past that storm. And by the next, I think that usually happens towards the end of the year, because most people are not learning anything once it's middle of November.
They are not in that headspace. Don't bring any. I just want to chuck my December and go, no learning. And then in January, it's like everybody just wants to learn and get serious with their life.
Exactly. So that January helped us. We picked up back in January. But I think that period happened between November and December. So we just sort of, powered through it. By January, we were fine. There was not too much money in the bank. So, but it also showed that we were not planning enough for that period, it happens every year, and we are in it right now. But the good thing now is we've planned, we've learned from that experience. We have different product lines that can still go on even during festive season. So, yeah, I think that was one painful one, but thank God we went through it.
I'm glad you pulled through it, because I really also believe in the vision of Zooteria, and I see what you're building, and I'm looking forward to all the successes and everything that you also launch in the future. Yeah, so final question, Godwin.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you weren't building Zooteria, what would you be doing?
That's hard, though.
I know you have many options to choose from.
Oh my God, that's so hard. And I, the reason why it's hard is, like, I've been doing this now for, 10 years. It's difficult to see something else. That's one of the challenges I think I'm having. Even when I look at the tools that have come out, AI, everything that I've learned, I'm still thinking of applying it to education. Yeah. I remember someone asked me once, why leave this education thing? And I said, I don't know. I need help to be able to pull myself out of it. I think if not to Terry, it would probably still be something in education. Maybe, I don't know, university, an online university or something. You know, because I still hope to do much more in education. And well, I have ideas to do stuff, you know, outside of education, you know, but when I'm doing those things, I find I'm not as passionate as I am when I'm doing something that's doing learning. Okay. Yeah. So I always just, no matter how I stray, I
find
always
your way back to education. Okay. That's nice. It's more of a calling at this point. Like, it's your calling.
That's what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Godwin. It's been such an honor to have you on the podcast. I've genuinely enjoyed our conversation. It's been very insightful, and I'm very happy to hear of everything that you're launching into Teria, the AI platform, the MedBody, I think that's what you called it, and all the features that would come into Teria for next year. So yeah, well done, and wishing you all the
best. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and great work as well you're doing with the podcast, with Chakra, with everything
else. Thank you so much.
And for me, I think this is a privilege to share. I don't get to share this nowadays because I'm just head deep trying to build.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for giving me the platform to share.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this episode. It's been so inspiring, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well. Till next time, I'll see you in another one. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.